Good morning and welcome to Coffee. I'm Samantha Watson, and here is a pre-recorded conversation between me and Governor candidate Tom Bagich when he was in town as part of his campaign trail last week. Tom Bagich, thank you so much for joining us today and coming on Coffee.
Thank you for having me. Yeah. This is great. I love being on the show and I'm talking to the community.
Amazing. Well, we're here in the studio in Bethel at KYUK. That's a way of saying you're here in town in Bethel.
I am.
Welcome.
I've been here before and I'm here again and I'll be here again.
Could you tell us a little bit about this trip? What brings you out here? Is this part of your campaign trail? And who have you been speaking to in town?
Oh, those are great series of questions. And yes, this is part of the campaign. And, the campaign is like a continuation of everything I've done in my life, professionally and otherwise. I'm coming to communities all across the state, where I'm listening to the concerns people have within their own community. I'm learning from those concerns because that's what makes a good leader. You have to listen, you have to learn from what you're listening, from what people are offering you. And then that helps form decisions that are actually emerging from community as opposed to being imposed on community. And that's why I'm here in Bethel. I've been to Bethel many times before, usually in a support role, helping people out. Sometimes it's helping develop a tribal court or an alternative program of some kind. Sometimes Bethel's been the hub as I've reached out to other villages and gone and spent my time and my evenings and mornings in other villages doing the same kind of work. And here I am now on a campaign trail running for governor, and very excited to hear what folks have to say here in Bethel and elsewhere. You asked me also who I'd seen, and I've been meeting with some of your leaders in town, but mostly I came to just listen to the students over at NSEPT and at the Alternative School for Starters. And that's really part of the process. You're meeting people, you're talking to people, you're going into businesses and getting a sense of who folks are and where they're at.
As you're saying, through asking those questions, or I guess perhaps through asking those questions or perhaps not, what are kind of the most pressing issues facing the YK Delta, or the top priorities that are kind of emerging to you in this?
Well, there are both immediate and long-term priorities. If you want to talk immediate priorities, it's making sure that those who've been displaced by the typhoon are actually dealt with fairly, and those who are housing them are also dealt with fairly. So in Anchorage, there are a lot of resources. There are far fewer resources out here, and I know Valerie Davidson was talking to me a little bit about this earlier today, and there isn't parity between the two, and so we have to make sure that the relief resources are coming to all the folks here in the Western Alaska that are taking care of those who were displaced by the typhoon. So that's an immediate need that has come up. I just learned while I've been here about the Neposkiok water issue and electricity issue. We hear about in South Central, we'll hear about Mat-Su, but we haven't heard about this, and this is a life and death situation. It's certainly going to cost a substantial amount of money to make sure that those repairs are undertaken. And the same goes with the short-term loss of three weeks and longer loss of power out in Naniac. These are things that are really unconscionable. We have to have a state that is stepping forward immediately to respond to all our residents, not just those that are in the rail belt or those who are in Southeast, but all of our residents deserve the same consideration when these kinds of things happen. Longer term, we're talking about food security. We're talking about ensuring that we have the ability to harvest for subsistence. In particular, we're talking about fish and how we maintain what we know from the last few years because of climate change and global warming, which I do believe in. We know that we're not only losing the ability to, if you will, grow our stock because of the warming of the Bering Sea, but we're also having it overfished, and we have to be able to respond to both of these crises in the long term. Finally, the other issue that's always at everyone's top of everyone's lips is the issue of ensuring we have quality education. That has come up a couple of times along this trip just in the last couple of days, and it will continue to come up everywhere I go because people want to be sure their kids are being educated. They want to be sure that education has value. They want to be sure that it gives kids an opportunity to either go to college, have a vocational career, or live in their own communities and thrive in their own communities. And that is my vision and my belief for the state as well.
And on the topic of education, facing this region in particular, as a lot of as communities look to rebuild or to relocate, there's some issues with infrastructure and with funding for these new facilities or beyond that, you know, what happens in these schools. And how are you thinking about that? And has that come up in your conversations here?
Well, I've been thinking about that for close to 30 years. You know, I worked on the Casale lawsuit, which was a lawsuit that was seminal for the state, because what it did is it ensured that we no longer treated rural Alaska poorly. That lawsuit ensured that we would build schools in rural Alaska with equity with urban Alaska, and that wasn't happening prior to that. So one of those schools that we were able to get funded and built was in Kivalina. And we went to the community in Kivalina and we said, where do you want that school built? Do you want it built where your village is now, or do you want it built somewhere else? What Kivalina told us is they wanted it built 7 miles away from where their town was, because they knew they needed over time to resite their community, because their community was washing away into the ocean. Mm-hmm. And so they did do that, and we advocated for them, and we fought for them. And our argument was, if the community believes this is where they should be building their school, let's build that school because it's the center of the community. And then what will happen is the community will naturally begin to grow around that school, just as Bethel has grown naturally in different ways, depending on where we build things here. What happened is that during the typhoon, during all this time when their own seaport was being washed away, they had a place to go. They went to their school. That's what visionary planning does. You say, 20 years from now, where will our community be? I want to reach out to communities across the state, in particular those that are threatened because of global warming and climate change, and say, where should you be moving? How should we fix this? How do we make this work from your perspective, not because we said so? And what will happen is you'll see people cite schools in areas they know are going to be safe from natural disaster, and you'll see people naturally do that. The state has a role in making sure that vision is realized. Mm-hmm. I utterly believe it, and I've actually taken action to make it happen as a private individual working in the community.
So as a governor, you envision working with tribes, working with communities.
Absolutely.
On their terms or their ideas in terms of...
There is no other way to do it. Who knows best about where a harvest is coming from? Who knows best if fish harvest is coming from? Who knows best about where a storm makes its biggest impact? Who knows best about where a flood reaches a certain level? The people in that community do, because they've lived there not just for generations, for thousands of years in the area. They will know what best to do. Our job is to help make it happen.
Mm-hmm. And as you were talking about like these, I think maybe if you peel back, it's truly true of every community that the school is the heart. But I think in rural Alaska, especially out here in the YK Delta, we're really seeing that. And as you mentioned with Typhoon Halong, that these schools were shelters, they were evacuation points. And on that subject, if elected governor, you would start your term, down the line. But this recovery and these rebuilding efforts, they would still very much be happening, and though at likely a different stage. Like, how are you thinking about that?
It's roughly three different things you're going to have to look at. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to be sure that the federal government is playing its part in that. With the ambiguity around FEMA now, and ambiguity around what and how we support communities that are quite frankly non-white. You know, we have an administration that isn't friendly toward these things. So we have to figure out how we work with our current congressional delegation to make sure that at least those levels of funding that we can get from the federal government continue to come in. That is critical. Every person running for governor ought to be telling you that. If they're not, they shouldn't be governor, because that is a critical component of our piece. But we cannot rely on the federal government, because we cannot trust that the federal government will be there. That's what we have learned in the last couple of years. We can't. So that means we have to be sure that we prioritize not just the construction, but the planning around how we repair and rebuild these communities. I think we have to be looking at a comprehensive approach that literally sits down community by community. And that's where Community and Regional Affairs has really kind of let the ball drop in a way. We have taken this department, we've rolled it into the Department of Commerce, and we've pretty much neglected it. That's, frankly, to me, outrageous. We have so many small communities that need planning assistance and support. We should be doing that. We will be in the middle of that reconstruction. It will take a decade. It takes a night to destroy a town. It takes a decade to rebuild it. That means that commitment cannot be one time, you're out of the news, we're not going to pay attention to you anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like this region, and it's interesting, as you mentioned, I think we've gotten a lot of that attention through, you know, statewide and beyond, nationally, internationally, because of this devastating typhoon. But otherwise, it seems like unless disaster hits, this region is often, even when disaster hits, this region feels very overlooked. And again, that's at a nationwide level as well, but also, you know, within the state. I've heard you speak before, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, so correct me if I'm wrong, that moving forward and making decisions as a state comprehensively is important to you. And as you mentioned, like considering all these different areas, how is Western Alaska, how is the YK Delta folded into these, when you're looking at these statewide decisions and these statewide priorities, how will you remember? I don't know if how will you remember the YK Delta is quite the right way to ask that question.
Please don't forget us.
Please do not forget us.
You know, when first, in terms of the Kasaalia and the Moore lawsuits, those were my work for almost 20 years. You know, the work in Kasaalia began in 94. We got a court decision that pointed out that our way we funded school construction in Alaska was racist because it ignored rural Alaska. I filed and did and volunteered a lot of my time in that process because it mattered to me. Then, I wasn't running for office. I was fighting the good work. You know, and by the time we finally got the settlement, which was a decade after that, you know, we never once let up. We constantly fought for that, that school construction. At the same time, we introduced the Moore lawsuit, which was about adequate education, focused on school districts like LKSD and UPID and Lower Yukon School District in Bering Straits. And we worked with those districts on that lawsuit. And at first, they went against us. They said, now the state's doing enough. But we were able to bring the case to them, so then the final decision, we won. And we won because people weren't providing teachers at the level that they were providing to urban areas, to rural areas. Every conversation I have, I will bring up the energy costs in LKSD and compare it to the energy costs in the Mat-Su Valley. And I do that because you pay exactly the same amount at LKSD that they do in a district four times as high. That means that you're not hiring teachers out here. That is an argument for using your operating budget to pay for electricity rather than to pay for instruction. The fact that LKSD is such a strongly performing district, despite that, is an example of how we can do things right. When I fought for pre-K for every district in this state, and it is being rolled in now because I won that battle, LKSD was my example because for 10 years they ran a pre-K program, even when the funding wasn't there. And we used that to show that what the results for those kids when they reached fourth grade and then when they reached eighth grade showed the rest of the state. That when LKSD and no school district have pre-K, their kids perform at par or better than other districts in the state. When you know that that innovation is happening in rural Alaska, it is part of the plan. It's not a neglected stepchild. It is the child. It is the standard that you use to set the rest of this policy making on. You base it on where it works in the best and most difficult climates. So I can't forget rural Alaska. I mean, I've slept on gym floors in Akiachuk. I was once even put in a jail cell in Point Hope because it didn't have anywhere else for me to stay. But I've always believed you overnight in the communities you're spending at the very least, you're spending time in at the very least. You don't pop in late afternoon or late morning and then pop out just before dusk. You actually have to overnight if you want to even get a sense of a community, and you're better served if you spend more time than that. And I've always tried to do that in every community I've been to, and I've been to a lot of them. And a lot of people don't know that, though. They don't know that I worked on helping set up, you know, the Togiak Tribal Court when they were first working that with juvenile justice, or alternatives to detention in Kotlik and Amonik. Those are on the Yukon River. And, you know, I've done my site visits, is what they called them, but I've been to, you know, I was the community justice coordinator for Alaska. I was in Mountain Village. I've been to Chivak. I've been working with the school districts that are in rural Alaska. I've been working with the tribal organizations in rural Alaska for close now to 35 years. And, you know, I've never tried to take credit for that work because I never actually did it. I just came to help. The communities did those projects. The communities did those things, but they shaped me. Mm-hmm. I don't know if any other candidate running for this office can say that. I can.
Mm-hmm. And another, I just wanted to ask you in our last few minutes here, when you're talking about candidates that might understand that, I know that you've said publicly that if Mary Peltola were to run for governor, that you would step down. This is a region that has historically backed Peltola. She's mm-hmm. from this region. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, she's a friend of mine. And, she and I have had various conversations about, what this job would entail. And I've always said to her that, you are the person that has the highest name ID in the state. That's the name identification in the state. You were a leading Democrat in the state, and I am a Democrat. And that what is most important is that we elect the next governor to change the direction our state is moving in, which will mean a governor who does have rural interests at heart. And to compete with each other would end up creating a situation where both of us could lose. And so should she jump into the governor's race, I'd be right there with her. If she doesn't, I would hope she'd be standing beside me. I'll be standing beside her, regardless of what she does.
Yeah, it sounds like it's, in part strategy, as you mentioned, but it also sounds like you feel like you're quite aligned in what you would be hoping to fill in this leadership position.
Yeah, we're aligned absolutely on education, for sure. And we're absolutely aligned on our understanding that climate change is having a direct impact on the region. And we're aligned on the fact that we have to make, fish first, as it were. We have to make sure that we survive our subsistence fishing in fish stocks in not just this region, but throughout the state. So, that alignment is clear. I've known her since she first served in the legislature from this region. I've always considered her an ally and a friend.
Right. Well, I'm sorry we're out of time here. but I would ask, do you have any closing remarks or anything else you'd like our listeners to know?
Well, I'd just like them to know that I'll be back. And when I come back, please watch for when I do the community conversations here. And please come join them. Ask me tough questions. Push me on issues. And I'll be happy to answer the questions you have. In the meantime, I'll try to make an open mic.
Yes. And do you play the guitar? Could you tell us what instruments you play?
I do. I play the guitar. I played other instruments, too. In fact, I dreamed of a few of them last night when I was asleep in here. But I play guitar. I have a bunch of albums out, and I perform all around the country, actually. So, that's sort of like everyone has a day job. That's kind of like my sidekick job. So yeah. I do it. Yeah.
Well, that was a great way to also plug Bethel Open Mic, Cusco Song Club, as it's called. So,
well, this is lovely.
Thank you
very
so
much for having me, Samantha.
That was Governor candidate Tom Begich speaking with myself, Samantha Watson, when he was in town last week. Thanks for tuning in.